Hey, Living for Food listeners. Hope you all are enjoying your week and the summer. Hopefully, it's also sunny wherever you are. This is going to be my last episode in season two before I take a bit of a summer break myself and schedule out amazing guests for you, hopefully in the late summer or fall. So make sure to check out my social media pages to stay updated on that, which are always linked in the description. This week on the podcast, I have an incredible entrepreneur who you may recognize from her pitch on Shark Tank, the incredible Katie Jo Evans, founder of The Frozen Farmer. She scored a deal on the show, and the brand is now known for their sorbets created from misfit fruit, along with other impending product launches that we talked about. We had a very sweet conversation about all things ice cream and her experiences running a business. So please join me in welcoming the lovely Katie Jo Evans.
One, two!
Thank you.
It's like so pretty too. It just is like the flowers and stuff. It's a very nice background. I need a background like that.
Thank you. They're actually fresh. Our hydrangeas are in bloom. So I went out yesterday and picked a bunch.
Oh, so pretty. Yeah, that reminds me of, I'm from East Coast. So hydrangeas always remind me of that and Cape Cod and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I love hydrangeas. They're so, so pretty. So it's so, so great to meet you. Thank you for coming on and doing this. I'm an avid ice cream lover, so I'm very excited to dive into your business and all of that stuff.
Well, thanks for having me. Who doesn't love ice cream, right?
I used to eat it all the time. Unfortunately, my body hates me for doing that now, but I used to eat it like it was my snack after school in high school, and I would eat it all the time when I had an amazing metabolism and it literally didn't matter. Can't do that now, but I still enjoy it. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of our no sugar added line and our low calorie sorbets. Like, you can literally eat a whole pint for less than what most other ice creams have in a single serving. So
there you go. Just did the pitch line. I love it. I like to go back to the beginning with guests first. You were an only child growing up with your first job at 12 being on neighbor's farm, picking produce and planting pumpkins. Did you see all of this coming full circle?
I mean, it's certainly full circle now that I've married a farmer and farming's a big part of our life. Having that been my first job on a farm, did I ever think that I was going to marry a farmer and this was going to be a part of my everyday life and my family's life? No, but we love it. And what's even more full circle is that my daughter is now 11, our oldest daughter, and she just recently started working on our family farm. So she's been learning the ropes, learning how to drive a tractor this summer, working really on both sides of our business. And she's been home from school for the summer. So it's exciting to see her take an interest in it.
Oh, is she enjoying it?
Oh, she loves it. I've had to pull her out of it the last couple of days. They worked a 12-hour day one day this week. They were done the farm market and the creamery. And then my husband took them out to the fields to set out our bee boxes for our watermelon plants. And it was like 8:30 p.m. when they got in. And we're ready to go at it again the next morning. So it's exciting that they take such an interest in it. And also, it's nice to not have them just laying around for the summer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Put them to work. Yeah. I feel like kids really need those hands-on experiences, especially just like digging in, even if it's like farming or something, whatever it is, like kids always need to be doing something. So I feel like farming is the perfect culmination of, you know, keeping them busy, having them learn something, and then having them do something like hands-on actively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny because really it's a lot of work. There's a lot of long days, long hours, but at the end of the day, it doesn't feel like you've worked, you know, in the same way that somebody's working a 9-to-5 job when you're doing so many different jobs throughout the day. And when your mind is in so many different places. Most days it's like 5:30 and everyone around here is like, wait a second, we didn't even break for lunch today. Not because, you know, of anything other than the fact that we were so engulfed in what we were doing. It just, time really flies by. It's like this weird time warp when you get to the farm and get, you know, your sleeves rolled up and into everything.
Right, right. Because you're up earlier than most people, and I'm assuming you go to bed later than most people as well.
I get up about 4 a.m. every day just to start my day personally, go to the gym and reset. You know, that's for me, that's as much a mental thing as a physical thing with the amount of activities that go on around here simultaneously and how many conversations we have going on at once about different projects, the different sides of our businesses. Yeah, our days end really late too. There's a lot of times where my husband's out in the field until, you know, 11 o'clock at night, midnight. Wow. We're taking dinner to the tractor, or he's stopping in really quickly just for dinner and then back out to it. So you have such a short season. You've got to get everything done. And, you know, Mother Nature doesn't always make it easy. So you're really at the mercy of the weather for the most part.
Yeah, that's so true. I give you a lot of credit for getting up at 4 a.m. and working out and doing all that stuff, because that's like, it's taxing. I mean, when you're already doing such a physical job, if you are working specifically on the farm or marketing or doing PR or whatever it is, it's like it takes so much out of you all day, and you have children. Like, it takes, there's so many things to juggle. So getting up at 4 a.m. to prioritize yourself is a very good thing. So I give you props for
that. Thank you.
All right. So I read in an interview that your parents are entrepreneurs as well. Is it, and it's kind of like a path that you always wanted. What was the pipeline between being a self-motivated person as when you were younger to getting into the PR fields out of college?
Yeah, my dad has owned his own business for a really long time. He's a welder. So that kind of goes full circle now too.
Oh, cool.
He helps fix equipment for my husband on the farm sometimes.
Oh, wow. That's really convenient.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. always good to have somebody handy around. My daughters race cars. So he has also been like working with the race team a little bit. But I grew up, my mom had her career in accounting, and she worked a lot. She went to college while I was little, finishing her degree. And, you know, it taught me from a really young age a lot of responsibility, because there were a lot of nights where it's like, okay, dinner's on you to fix and get ready for the family. And I feel like I learned those life skills of like making dinner and doing the laundry, because my dad and mom both were working their jobs and also, you know, hobbies and things like that. My dad's an avid hunter and fisherman, so he loves the outdoors. He was always just like in the backyard hunting, but I would have dinner ready for the both of them by the time he came up from the woods and by the time my mom came home from work.
Ooh, okay, so just as a food journalist and being on a food podcast, what were you cooking for them when you were younger? Do you remember?
Usually really easy to make meals is kind of like when I started making things that my mom could give me 5 or 6 steps and easily follow, which is kind of where we started with my daughters too, and teaching them how to cook. They actually started their own cupcake business last summer. We bought a little, we bought a little sweet treat cart for our farm market, and called it KJ's Cupcake Cart, because all of our 4 daughters have the initials KJ. They were just baking every free moment and decorating cupcakes and setting them out on the cart, and they were selling. And in fact, we started getting orders for them by the end of the season last year. Yeah, we had customers saying, oh, we've got a birthday party this weekend. Is KJ's Cupcakes going to be having any kind of certain cupcake that we can plan on, because that was our plan for the party. So they started taking some orders last season, and that's really like, that was exciting too, to see their passion for like just wanting to have their own thing and take some responsibility on their own to keep that cart stocked and replenished. And then this year they're actually involved in the real business at the frozen farmer, learning how to make ice cream and learning the market and the procedures of what it is that we do there.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. That must have been such a proud mom moment, like watching them. And then actually profiting off of it is crazy. Because normally when you're a kid and you're doing like a stand like that, people will give you money or a dollar. I had a lemonade stand, I'm pretty sure, when I was young. But parents will do it because it's fun and stuff. But when they actually want the product for like their birthday parties, that says a lot about their skills. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, they were delicious. So I actually just recently told them, we moved the cupcake cart into our farm creamery. We do a lot of ice cream cakes and things like that at the creamery. So we've got this big birthday candle display sitting on it right now. But I told them, we need to get it back over to the market, and you guys need to get it restocked again for this summer, just because they drummed up that interest last year. And so I'm sure they're going to have people this summer want to place orders. I've already had people inquiring, are they doing it again? So I definitely want to see them keep up with it.
That is so fun. And they're kind of following in mom's footsteps with the entrepreneurial stuff too. It's like already seeing in them that in them when they're so young is so, so cool. My family is very obsessed with ice cream cakes. We have them at every single birthday, but I can 1000% guarantee that yours are more delicious because we just had a Dairy Queen down the street.
Okay. So. Yeah, we do really neat flavors for our ice cream cakes. Right now we're in strawberry season at our family farm. We're doing lots of strawberry pretzel salad ice cream cakes. They're not just delicious. Yum. They're gorgeous too. We're really excited. We're launching our very first ice cream cake in national retail later this year. Excited to take that project. Yeah. There's so many ice cream puns that are great.
I know. I know. I whenever I have to write articles about anything ice cream related, I pull out every corny dad.
You're like, oh, this is easy. I've got this.
Yeah, I'm like, we're all screaming for ice cream. I'm like, oh my god,
it's such a sweet deal.
Yeah, no, literally. So how did you get into the PR field out of college? What was the transition for you there?
Well, when I graduated high school, I actually thought I wanted to go into mass media. So I went away to University of Delaware and took some mass media communications classes. My second year into it, it was the largest major of the university. And I came from a really small high school. Being an only child, I definitely felt lost in a class of 200 to 300 people. And not having that personal one-on-one relationship with my professors was a little difficult our first year. Second year, our class size got smaller. We broke into smaller groups. And one of my instructors was the 6 o'clock news anchor for the Philadelphia News. And she structured our class just like the newsroom. So if there was like an accident on Main Street, she would send us out to interview who was involved and record our voiceover and do our stand up and have it all fully edited and back in the class at the end of the course. And she had this countdown clock in the class. And if you were even 1 second late, she would give you an F.
Oh God, that's so stressful for someone.
It was so stressful. But I understood where she was coming from because she's like, look, I'm live on the news. I have nothing to report if you didn't meet your deadline. And sometimes the seconds matter in the newsroom, which I'm really glad she gave us that realistic perspective of what it's like because I quickly learned that I did not want to be in the newsroom and changed my major to public relations and journalism. I've always had a very big passion for writing. Took a job out of college with the Delaware Farm Bureau as their public relations coordinator. So got right back into the ag industry. And got recruited by a PR firm based in Virginia. I was telecommuting. This all goes very full circle. Okay. I was writing press releases for Jack Roush's company, Roush Cleantech, which is a propane autogas company. And they sponsored, Jack Roush is also a NASCAR owner, and he sponsored the Daytona 500 Roush Cleantech car that year, which was driven by Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And we recently got to sponsor Ricky Stenhouse Jr. with a Kroger race team for the Frozen Farmer brand, and have since become...
I saw that on your website.
That's we've become really good friends with him and his wife, Madison, and they're getting ready to welcome their first baby. So it's like all so full circle that I had these goals of having this career that had nothing to do with the industry. And then my job in the industry ended up full circle connecting us with now a very good friend of our family through the Frozen Farmer.
That's wild. Yeah, that's one of those scenarios where it's like it was very meant to be and you kind of seem like you've found your purpose for sure. The newsroom media journalism, I also learned very quickly, is not for me. It is so different than me writing articles about food and travel online.
Yeah.
It is, I remember my first ever story was me, I went to the University of Connecticut. So I was supposed to basically get into the nitty gritty of something on campus. And I was like trying to get into the nitty gritty of the fire alarms on campus and like if they are checked regularly, if they are, it was a lot of investigative journalism. So I remember my first ever interview was like with a fireman, and you know, I was like 20 at the time, and you know, he was this older guy, like way has so much more experience than me. And he met me at a cafe and I was so nervous. And then I was like, this type of writing isn't really for me because it's so dry.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, it has to be, it's to the point because it's just supposed to get the information out there.
Right.
But it's just not creative.
Yeah. There's zero room for creativity with news writing. Now, press releases I did enjoy because you can put that creative spin on it. You only have so long to capture someone's attention. So I still do all of our press release writing at the Frozen Farmer and really utilize a lot of my public relations skills. When it comes to the journalism side of my degree, I actually just wrote my first children's book that's getting ready to come out next month. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I shouldn't say I just wrote it. I wrote it 8 years ago when we started The Frozen Farmer, but it definitely took a backseat to the business for so long. And last year, my husband just really pushed me to get it published and finish it up. And it's been a year of hard work, but it's finally getting ready to launch. And I'm so excited for it to come out.
That's so fun. Tell me what it's about. Is it a farmer related book?
It is. So it's based on our oldest daughter. It's called Kenna the Produce Princess and the Crown of Confidence.
Cute.
Yeah. So essentially she wears this invisible crown that gives her confidence because her mom's always told her that she's a princess of produce, of watermelon and corn. And it's a rhyming book. But she loses that confidence when she meets the Watermelon Queen and thinks that she's not going to win the seed spit contest. And then the Watermelon Queen explains to her that a princess is a place in your heart. And so it teaches kids self-confidence. It also portrays, you know, females in agriculture, which is something I'm very passionate about. And I'm excited to see where it goes. We've already discussed it being a series, and I've got a few other ideas for the next one, so we'll see.
Oh, that's so fun. It sounds like the illustrations for that would be really vibrant and cool.
They are, yeah. I'm super excited about the illustrations. They're gorgeous. We actually sent our illustrator some photos from our family farm, so there are elements throughout the book that, you know, very much portray everyday life here at Evans Farms and the Frozen Farmer.
Oh, that's so amazing. Do you know for listeners where you can snag that book? Will it be on shelves?
It will be available on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, and I'm actually getting ready to launch a Kickstarter for the project too, just for to cover printing costs for our local bookstores.
Oh, fun. There is nothing I love more than a local bookstore or going into Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
I just like, maybe I'm just a writing nerd, but like my brain just automatically relaxes. It smells so good in there, just like books. And it's just so peaceful to walk around. I could spend like, I would always go with my mom and we would just spend like so long in there picking out books. And then I'd have to put some back because it would add up to like way too much money.
That was actually one of the places my husband and I stopped on our very first date was a local bookstore. Because I've always enjoyed reading, always enjoyed writing. And they're few and far between nowadays. Although we have a handful of small family-owned bookstores that still exist down toward the Delaware beaches. So I've already talked to a few of them about bringing the book in, and they're agreeable to it. So I'm excited to see where it goes. But yeah, printing's expensive. So that's why we're going to launch on Kickstarter.
That's something I've very much learned through talking through to lots of cookbook authors. My friend self-published a book. It's a lot of intensive labor and a lot of money.
Yeah, but it's not just a time investment. It's a financial investment too. So one thing I can definitely tick off the bucket list, I've always wanted to publish my own book, and I hope that this is just a start of where Kenna the Produce Princess goes.
It definitely will be. There's actually, if you ever are in California, there is a very, very cute local bookstore that's been around for so, so long in Ojai, California. So Ojai is like a beautiful, and for listeners too, like it's a beautiful day trip that you can take from Los Angeles, and it's just like a nice little getaway. Honestly, a lot of celebrities go there too for like a little getaway kind of thing. But there's this local bookstore that's been around forever, and they have books dating back to like so long, like 100 years ago.
That's
and
really stuff. Cool.
So you can just look through, and every section is really curated perfectly and stuff, but it's just old and it's actually outdoors. So it's not inside.
That is so neat. So cool.
You were interested in entrepreneurship early on. Did you always have your eyes on being on Shark Tank at some point in your career? Because I feel like entrepreneurs say that sometimes the path for them.
It's funny. A lot of people, you know, start a business to be on Shark Tank. I had actually never watched Shark Tank prior to pursuing the opportunity. When we opened the Frozen Farmer in 2015, people continually told us, oh, you've got to pitch this business on Shark Tank. You know, your business model of using the upcycled fruit from your own farm is so unique and it would go awesome on the show. I think the sharks would love it. And it just kept coming up over and over again in literally every conversation we had for probably the first year of business. And we got our foot in the door with Giant Food as our first major retail partner.
Okay.
We had been selling produce to Giant for more than a decade on that side of our Evans Farms business. And so the Evans Farms name was very popular in stores in Giant, especially in the summer season when they carry our watermelon and our corn. And I had done in-store promotions for the farm brand. So when we launched the Frozen Farmer, we took some of our very first flavors to one of our meetings at the corporate Giant headquarters in Maryland, landed a meeting with the Frozen team, who gave us the incredible opportunity to launch the Frozen Farmer on shelf. And we were just hand packing the pints at that time in a kitchen space that is about half the size of my office now. It was so super small.
Yeah,
we didn't have any frozen storage like we needed to supply the stores. We had a double door freezer, like just for our, our scoop buckets and our ice cream truck that we were supplying. So we started slow. We took on 5 stores. By year 3, I think it was, we worked our way up to like 70 some stores that we were supplying direct store delivery style. Giant came to us in that third year and they were like, look, we have so much demand for the Frozen Farmer products. We want to launch you in all of our locations. We want you to ship to our warehouse. And so I had done some research on
that. Adds a bunch of other layers.
Oh yeah. So many logistics. I had done some research on like that whole process. By that time we had built a larger on-farm creamery here at Evans Farms. Okay. And so we had a sizable walk-in and really the space that we needed to supply the stores that we were supplying, but not haul to warehouse. And so we knew what the packaging order alone was going to be just to do the initial pipe fill for those locations.
Yeah.
And I was talking with the buyer team at Giant and even they suggested, oh, why don't you pursue Shark Tank? This was like a great story for the show. And so I had reached out to Bethany Frankel on Cameo, just asking for a Cameo video to send to my Giant buyers to say, yes, we're going to go for it. And she sent me a Cameo back to share with my buyer team and congratulate us on the Giant food placement. But she said, you've got to pitch your business to Shark Tank. And if I were a shark on the show, I would invest in the business. She wasn't a shark on our season, but it was at that point, I was like, Shark Tank may be our path. Let's pursue this. And I attended an open casting call in New York City, stood in line at like 3 a.m. with my then 6-year-old daughter, Kenna, who was dressed as a strawberry. And we made just
stop. That's so cute.
She was adorable. And everybody was asking to take pictures with her. And I pitched our product. And they did let us know during the casting that we may or may not taste your product if you bring a food product, because they're presented with so much food. And, you know, don't take it offensively if they didn't try it. Well, our casting person did, and he took one bite of our orange cream Frobert, and he put down his spoon, and he was like, that's all I need, thank you. And I was like, wait, I have more. Don't you want to converse? Don't you want to ask me questions? I've got so much more dialogue that I had prepared for.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, no, that's all I need, thank you very much. And, like, just shook his head, and I was like, either that just got us through and he loved it that much, or we mm-hmm. like totally blew it and we have not a shot. So I went home scratching my head.
I would have cried.
Yeah. I went home scratching my head so much. I was like, I don't know how it went. Everybody was asking me, oh, how did it go? How did it go? I have no mm-hmm. idea. Saw a rainbow on the way home. I had a dream that on 2 o'clock, on Tuesday at dance class, while I was waiting for my daughter, that they called me and told me that I had made it to the next round of casting. And Tuesday after Tuesday after Tuesday came.
Oh my gosh.
And I heard nothing uh-huh. for like a month and a half. And one Tuesday night, we were sitting at dance class and the phone rang and it was a California number. And it was that casting person. And he said, Katie, you've made it through to the next round. I didn't need to hear anymore when I tried the orange cream Frobert because it was the best thing I'd ever tasted.
Whoa.
Let's go. So I was excited. I was like, all right, we have a chance now. And I was really glad that I didn't just send in a cold application, that I actually made sure he tried the product. And so, yeah, from there, it just kind of, you start working with the production team and you get assigned a couple of producers to work with, and they make sure you're well prepared mm-hmm. and well practiced. And I took my daughter with me to California for the 5 days that we were out there. She really calmed my nerves. So it was an experience mm-hmm. for her. I know she'll never forget too.
Oh, did she dress like a strawberry when you were on the show that
no,
day?
No, she didn't dress like a strawberry. She actually wasn't a part of my television pitch. She hung out in the trailer while I pitched. She was just there for moral support. It was cute. They went to Build-A-Bear. I took one of my best friends, Heidi, with me to help me with my daughter. They went to Build-A-Bear the mm-hmm. day before our actual television pitch, and they built a stuffed mm-hmm. shark, and she put this little recordable in one of the fins, and it said, good luck, mommy. I know you're going to do great.
Oh, my God. That's
yeah,
so cute.
So I kept that in the trailer while I was practicing. I actually practiced on the little stuffed shark as, like, to calm my nerves down.
Oh, my God. That's so thoughtful and cute. Build-A-Bear, such a core memory for me. That is crazy. I think that's so hard if they don't try your product when you're a food business. Like, when you're supposed to pitch yourself like that, but then they are unsure if it's actually good or not. Like, how are they supposed to determine? I mean, I get it when you're trying that many things. Like, it's taxing. I've been to dinners where they've literally served me 14 courses. Like, I get it. But at the same time, it's like, how, I don't know. I just feel like for me, that'd be the deciding factor on if you went through or not. In addition to like personality and the story behind it, because it's still television.
Well, and that's the other thing. I feel like, you know, if you have a compelling story, you know, if you're well projected, if you're well practiced in your pitch, you know, you've already got a little bit of a leg up. You know, our story was pretty compelling with the farm to table connection. It was one of those things, really, that I think the stars kind of all aligned for us to go on Shark Tank. And, you know, maybe that always was our path. But it's funny that it kept coming up so much in the early days of starting mm-hmm. The Frozen Farmer. And I had never even watched a Shark Tank episode.
That is really interesting to me because I don't know. I feel like, did you feel kind of pressure to go on it and then pressure to like make a deal because it was so brought up to you so often?
I mean, I did feel like I, you know, of course, everybody, if you're putting yourself out there in such a vulnerable way, which telling your story and making your pitch on national television, of course, you want to at least secure an offer. For people who don't, I've seen them go on and be incredibly successful still and just use the platform, you know, as a way to get their product in front of buyers all across the nation, all across the world, for that matter. It's funny, we have people from everywhere write us when they re-air our episode. I mean, they'll air it on airplanes, and people are flying from here to Paris. Or, you know, I've recently heard from a ton of people in Australia. I guess they replayed it there. So it's always interesting to like get to the desk the next morning, and if your email's flooded here, still even years later since our episode is aired, you always know where you have re-aired and that kind of thing by how full your inbox is of customer inquiries in the morning.
Wow, that must feel good though. It's so crazy. You wouldn't think it has that reach, especially because there are so many brands and products that go on there. And, you know, you never know, like, how people are going to react and, like, if yours is going to get overshadowed by someone else's or vice versa. So it's so interesting how they have so much reach for every individual brand that got a deal or didn't get a deal. That's just so crazy.
Well, we got really fortunate because about a week after we flew home from filming our Shark Tank episode, mm-hmm. I got a phone call from the production team saying that they were flying here to our farm creamery to film our episode. Oh. And now they do so many business updates that they have very few home package features where they fly to the new business and film the, you know, backstory. We got a little bit more airtime to tell our story, to have the team come to our farm and film inside our operation and give that kind of behind the stage peek at who we were than any other entrepreneur that pitched on our season. So I think they re-air our episode quite often. And then we did get a business update that following year to tell the story of like where we've come and how much we've done in sales and all of the new products that we had launched at that time. And it was a very cool opportunity. And then Lori, of course, has been just a great partner to us. We're one of the few that actually settled our deal with her after it all was said and done. I know a lot of times, you know, sharks make an offer on a business on the show and maybe you even shake hands mm-hmm. or hug and, you know, you think that they're truly invested and then you go through the due diligence process and it's just not the right fit, whether that's for the shark or for the entrepreneur. But for us, Lori is an invested partner in our business. You know, she's been a really great partner in bringing us up on future episodes when there have been other brands that maybe could learn lessons from our brand and what we've learned. She's brought that up a few times and mentioned our brand and product line. And anytime she does, it's crazy the emails that we get and the spike in sales too.
Wow, that is crazy. I guess I never really thought about the afterwards, I guess, and I'm sure a lot of the audience assumes this too, once you get a deal, it's done. You know, you don't really think about all this stuff afterwards, all the contracts and negotiations that really go into that. So you always just assume when they say they're investing, they're going to invest.
Yeah, no. And it's funny because when we attended that casting in New York, Mindy, the casting person for Shark Tank, she said, if you make it through this process and film, you will become a part of the Shark Tank family forever. And really that's what it is. You know, we have private groups on Facebook and I've gotten to know some of the other entrepreneurs, not just from my filming pod, but from other seasons of the show. Even there's a reunion every year and we're going this year. Yeah, I'm excited, but it really does kind of become a part of your life. And you have this awesome, like, net of community to bounce ideas off of and say, hey, what's working for you? Mm-hmm. Or if you've got questions about things, you know, or if you've got a new product launching, it's just like this group of cheerleaders to get behind you and support you forever. Love our little Shark Tank family.
That's incredible. You need that as entrepreneurs sometimes. Sometimes it can be like so isolating and then you also just don't know if something's going to work. And just to have that extra set of eyes on things, especially with people who've gone through it before, is certainly helpful in the entrepreneurship space because it can be a little bit isolating at times and sometimes it can just be like a one-way path.
Yeah.
You know? But to have other people to bounce
and
off,
when you go on the show, I mean, everybody is at a different stage of building their brand and building their business. Right. I mean, there are some very experienced, very seasoned companies that end up getting cast. And then there are some people who literally have this brand new idea that just launched, you know, right before the show. So it's neat hearing different people's perspectives. It's also very valuable to talk to some of the people who have been on seasons well before you because they've had, you know, so much more experience with it than you have. But yeah, there's always something to learn being an entrepreneur, and who better to learn from than others who have been through it too.
Have you met Allison Ellsworth, who's the founder of Poppy?
I have not. No, I would love to meet her though. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of hers.
She was on my episode. I recorded with her like a while back, and she's the only other Shark Tank individual that I've had on here. So I was wondering if you guys.
Yeah, no, I watched her clip. Definitely a big fan of hers, a fan of Poppy. We have a Barbie license too, so that's one commonality.
Oh,
but
cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to hopefully someday meet her.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because you guys kind of seem like you would align. Yeah. So I was curious. But you also made me laugh because I was watching your Shark Tank segment. And Lori, you accepted like the deal so quick, and you're like, I know I'm supposed to negotiate. Yeah. I'm like so excited. So I would have been the same thing.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, of course they tell you like, oh, if you get offers, you know, negotiate with them. Like, don't take the first thing that comes across your plate. But for us, it was like, I was just excited to have, you know, her join the business, and also knew that after that curtain falls, you have the opportunity afterward to negotiate. You know, it was one of those moments that I'll never forget. And then she said, well, can you put the crown on my head? And I was like, of course.
Yeah. Queen Lori.
But then you gotta get two wonderful. Crowns now. Yeah. He was like, Kevin was like, wait, no, why don't I get a crown? And she's like, oh my gosh. Okay. So then she put it on his head.
Of, you know, Shark Tank a little bit. Something that I'm particularly interested in is the food waste aspect of all of it. Lori had mentioned the name Misfit Fruit Sorbet, but then you landed on Frozen Farmer. How did that come about?
We stuck with the Frozen Farmer just because it does connect the brand to us as farmers and food producers, which I think is just such a unique aspect of our brand. There are already misfit fruit companies out there. You know, there's Uglies. And I feel like from where we had discussed, it was like, okay, that's your really unique identifiers. Like, you're the producer of food, but you're also the manufacturer of food. And now that we've launched our national line, no, all of the fruit is not coming from our family farm anymore, but we are sourcing upcycled fruit. Now, everything that we produce at our farm creamery in Delaware does come from our fields when we're local in season, or as much of it as we can possibly cut up anyway. So again, we're in strawberry season right now, and it's a constant cycle of cutting up strawberries when you're in peak season to utilize them as quick as possible and then store as much as you can for the out of season times. And that gives us the creative outlet to like make really unique flavors to our local farm creamery. So sweet corn ice cream is one of our popular summer flavors, a very unique flavor there in the ice cream space. But being from Delaware and so close to Maryland, blue crabs are a really big part of our culture. And so the sweet corn ice cream, one of the topping options that we have is Old Bay.
Wow, really? Yeah,
so very fun.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And that's a popular one that people grab?
People love the sweet corn ice cream in the summer. It tastes like almost tastes like a very rich buttercream because sweet corn is so sweet. Okay. There's so much sugar content in it. So we basically cook the corn and extract the sugar juice and then run that through our vanilla batch. But then we like freeze the corn too and cut the kernels off the cob. So like every bite you'll get like this pop of a real corn kernel that is a delightful surprise.
I will have to drive to Delaware and do that because if I'm going to drive anywhere, it's going to be for ice cream. So I would love to try that.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, if you ever come by, please get up with me. I'd love to meet you in person.
Oh, I'd love that. I'll let you know. What is, and this is more in the conversation of food waste, because I feel like with your sorbets especially, you know, they're being made from rejected, quote, strawberries and fruits, which, you know, adds to the conversation of food waste. How can you utilize things in different ways? What is a practice you think that everyone should implement into their lives to aid the fight in food waste? What do you think, if you have any tips or anything like that?
I mean, it's food waste happens in so many places. It starts here in the farmer's field because a lot of times grocery stores have such high cosmetic standards for the way that produce looks, and it's easy to get rejected at the grocery store if something's not at the peak of freshness or the perfect size and spec. For example, our watermelons get brokered into grocery stores really everywhere, and watermelons are a great example of that. So they have to meet a certain size to make it to the bin, and you have bin counts by how big the watermelons are. Well, not every watermelon grows to exactly that perfect size. And so you've got some really huge melons, you've got some smaller melons, and but they're all edible, right? So it's educating the consumers first. Mm-hmm. And that's our job as farmers. And one thing we're really passionate about at the Frozen Farmer, and I'm particularly passionate about as a female in ag, is just knowing that, you know, most females are the ones who cook the food for their family, and being mindful of that when they're shopping too, to not overlook that section of the grocery store. If they do have a section for the second produce, a lot of times is a really good space to get snag a good deal. And a lot of times it's not necessarily that bad of produce. It just might be missized or misshaped. It's not that it's like rotten or nasty. Right. That's one space that we really feel passionate about, is just educating consumers. The other thing we talk a lot about are best by dates versus sell by dates. They're different, or expiration dates rather. When something expires, clearly it's no good to, you know, eat or consume anymore. When it has a best by date or a sell by date on it, you can still buy it. Just eat it right away or consume it right away. And milk's an example of that too. I know that, you know, there's a lot of waste that happens in the milk industry, but we're all guilty of it, you know. But if you know you're gonna consume, you know, the gallon or half gallon or whatever you're buying, by the time that that date is on the packaging,
right,
that's the sell-by date. It's not the expiration date. The grocery store is another level where there's a lot of food waste that happens because they have to have cosmetically perfect fruit, because that's what people usually choose. And then it happens too at the consumer table, because we have a tendency to overbuy or not store produce correctly, or food for that matter. We just let it go bad in the fridge. We don't cook the meat, throw it away, freeze it. If it's reached its sell-by date, stick in the freezer, you know, and cook it at a later time. For produce, you want to, you know, practice good handling and know right ways to ripen fruit if they're unripe. A lot of times that means like put them in a paper bag on your counter and they'll ripen right up and you can eat them right away. Just don't let things sit there and rot, and then you're contributing to the food waste problem, right? For us, it's mainly about educating consumers and trying to combat it in that way as much as, you know, utilizing it ourselves at the Frozen Farmer and turning it into other products that can be consumed. But it's exciting to see other companies doing just that and different ways that fruit can be consumed or turned into value-added products like our sorbet pints.
I do definitely agree with freezing things, because I have to travel a lot for my job, and also I live by myself, so things can go bad very quickly. So I just have learned how to maximize the stuff I'm eating, use it up, whatever it is. But you can literally put like mostly anything in the freezer if you're not going to use it. People forget that. Like, you don't have to throw out. I literally had half a bag of fresh green beans. I was like, I'll just put these in the freezer and use them in a stir fry later or something. Like, you don't have to throw everything away, even though you think
that you do. Yeah. I mean, even like peaches, bananas, cut them up, put them in a bag. They make great smoothies later, you know. I have other farm friends that they do a lot of canning and a lot of freezing when they're in harvest. I can't say that I have a lot of time to can, but I wish I did. And that's something that I've definitely thought a lot about and explored to see if someday, if time permits, I would love to get into canning.
Me too. I feel like that's the thing. It's the we like feel like it's a time waster sometimes to like take these extra steps and do these extra things, which sometimes, I mean, a task like that definitely is like a big time commitment. But just like learning different ways to do like create less food waste quickly is like not that hard. Even if I went to the grocery store and I saw a misshapen watermelon, but I knew it wasn't rotted, like I feel like I would still buy it. I don't really see the big deal. I don't need like a perfect circular watermelon every time.
Well, and we're starting to see our retail partners, you know, catch on a little bit more too. So, and some of them have more aggressive issue programs than others. Kroger's an awesome retail partner of ours, but they have a program called Zero Hunger, Zero Waste that we've even tried to tie our brand into. So our goal ultimately was like to work full circle with Zero Hunger, Zero Waste to see if we could source the misfit fruit that they had at store level back to our brand to turn into, you know, finished goods. It's a very complex issue. And then carbon emissions gets put into all of that. And it's like, you don't want to spend extra carbon emissions on things. But they have those cute little food carts in the produce department at their stores for kids. I know my kids love going into a Kroger because there are always like little oranges or bruised bananas or something at the cart. And they're like, oh, mom, can we have a snack while you shop? You know, but it's just, it's great.
Oh, and smart.
They do all kinds of things through Zero Hunger, Zero Waste, food donations and things like that, that they're not able to sell to consumers. So it's exciting seeing retailers and their programs doing things to combat food waste along with us.
That's smart. I like ideas like that when you can get creative with it and then, you know, we'll solve the problem one bruised banana at a time, but still.
And at the farm level, like we work with, like some of our farmers markets have gleaning programs that go to local food pantries. We've worked with the Delaware Food Bank before for food donations when we've had a surplus that we're not able to sell or things like that. So it's, you know, also from a producer perspective, being very mindful of what you're wasting and finding places that are able to utilize that.
Yeah, that too. Even for people at home, like if you know you're not going to use something prepackaged or box, like there's food banks everywhere.
Yes, and hunger exists and it's growing and it's devastating to me as a producer of food who grows food because it's like it shouldn't exist with as many outlets as there are to get food to people. So we work some with like I know some of the schools around here too have programs that we've worked with, even with the Frozen Farmer business, where they do summer meal programs for students who don't have food at home. They've got food trucks that run around the community, almost like a ice cream truck,
and
they deliver boxes of food to students when they're not in school and home for the summer. Because to some kids, unfortunately, school is the only meal that they get. And so these programs that our school districts are starting to implement, you know, they deliver those meals to kids when they're not in school, and they have box pickup programs for them to take home dinner. It's awesome to be able to partner with them when we can to supply them with food for those students and, just help them combat hunger and not just food waste.
That's incredible. Well, thank you for, you know, contributing to that and bringing awareness to it. And, you know, every time you're bringing awareness to it, it's helping.
Thank you.
You know, so I know a lot of people are like, well, what can I do about XYZ? We just gave you XYZ ideas on like what you can do. So there are things you can do. Just educate yourself a little bit more, look things up, look at charity. Like there's so many places that you can go. So I have one more question for you in terms of the entrepreneurship world. For future entrepreneurs in the food space, what would you say is the most unexpected problem that's happened so far since starting a business, and how do you recommend handling it?
From the food space, particularly as an entrepreneur in the grocery industry, I think just the cost to do business with retailers was unexpected to me. I think a lot of people think, oh, because you've done millions of dollars in sales, you guys are millionaires, or you know, your company must be making millions. Is very expensive to do business, especially nationally, the way that we do it. You know, logistics are expensive. Storage is expensive. Store slotting is expensive. It's expensive just to get your product on the shelf, let alone gain placement and gain interest of your product. Once you get it there, there are all these other layers of expenses that go along with it. Promotional programs to get that product selling and appealing to the consumer and a price point that the consumer wants to try it. Gaining trial is always a very tricky thing. The biggest piece of advice I would say is like just to do a lot of research and make sure that, you know, that move is going to be sustainable for you and your business long term, because it is very expensive to break into.
Ugh, the word expensive, everything is so expensive these days.
It's yes.
Like, can't avoid it.
Yeah.
I have a short game for you if you're up for it. I'm going to do like a lightning round. I'm going to pin ice cream flavors against each other, and I specifically picked flavors from your website because I wanted to make it interesting. And then you'll choose your favorite, if that makes sense.
That's going to be hard. They're like all my babies. Okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And also for me, this is very hard because I literally love every single one of these. So it's hard. First one, chocolate chip cookie dough versus chocolate brownie fudge.
Chocolate brownie fudge.
I think I have to choose that one too, but those are my two favorite flavors on the planet. So that is really impossible. Second one, sweet and salt, salty caramel versus cookies and cream.
Sweet and salty caramel.
I agree. Third one, mint chocolate chip versus Rocky Road.
Mint chocolate chip.
Same here. I think that too. I used to actually hate mint.
Really?
But I think I've matured. Yeah, it was a weird, weird phase in my life. But I think I've matured as an adult and now I actually like it.
Yeah.
Fourth one, strawberry versus vanilla.
Strawberry, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know. I'll never be a plain vanilla gal. I just...
I am definitely not a plain vanilla gal. No.
Fifth one, peanut butter cup versus butter pecan.
Oof. Pecan. That's the hardest one, I think. peanut butter cup for a milkshake. Butter pecan for a scoop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's... I just went to this place the other day and they just came out with all of these new milkshake flavors. So a lot of the times I have to try them all and they gave me three giant milkshakes and it was taking everything in my well-being not to drink all three of those because I would have been ill, but I would have been happy.
Yeah,
so.
R&D days around here are like really fun when you have all of the different flavors to sample. We're getting ready to launch a full line of our ice cream. So we're going to step out of our sorbet space a little bit and launch some ice cream with Barbie at Kroger later this year. We've got four amazing flavors coming to market. But they're all ice cream flavors and like fun party flavors. So doing R&D on the Barbie line has definitely been a highlight of my career because having the whole spread of flavors and going to our co-packing facility where they run our products in large scale and doing the R&D with the team there and like just trying everything was amazing. It's like heaven when you have all of these options to try. And sometimes it's really difficult too, because you're like, oh, I like this one from this flavor, but I like the creaminess of this from this flavor. So like take this element and combine them. And it's hard to choose a favorite.
I believe that. I'm like, I literally am such an avid ice cream lover. But if you ever need an extra taste tester,
I'll send it your way.
I will hop on a flight.
Well, I'll have to send you a box regardless, just so that you can try it, especially when the Barbie line launches.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that Barbie line. I'm sure it's going to be all pink and pretty and packaged very well.
Oh, yeah, the packaging has been a super fun project to work on. And we're getting ready to launch our second freezer squeezer SKU, which is like our sorbet squeeze-up tube. We launched our first one with Barbie this year. It was our strawberry lemonade and it has taken off. The flavor's phenomenal, but it doesn't have any artificial food coloring in it. We color it with vegetable juice. So moms have loved that.
Good.
And we're getting ready to launch our Malibu mango pineapple. So as soon as I have production samples, I'll send them your way.
Oh my gosh. Malibu mango pineapple. Wait, those are all like, I actually have been obsessed with pineapple and mango lately. So that sounds like my dream. That is sounds so
it's
good.
It's like a vacation for your mouth. It's so good.
Oh, sounds like a pina colada.
Yeah. Well, we added the Malibu in there for Malibu Barbie, of course.
Oh, very cute. Malibu is just so like beach. And so the moment you put that in any kind of title, like people are going to be intrigued like that. Like it's just so fun. Well, congratulations on that. That's so exciting. I can't wait to see the entire line in stores and all of that. That'll be super, super fun. So I have my final question for you, which normally if I have chefs, I ask them like a cooking question, but I'm going to ask you an ice cream question. In general, what do you think is the most underrated ice cream flavor or topping?
Most underrated ice cream flavor.
You guys are so creative. I feel like it's so hard to pick one, but you could pick a few.
I feel like banana. We have a banana pudding.
Oh.
the people who know that we have banana pudding come in and want nothing else. But I feel like banana is an underrated ice cream flavor that is delicious. And not only that, like, you can mix it with other ice cream flavors for a really awesome sundae. Mm-hmm. I'm a very, like, make your own concoction person. So if you give me a plain flavor, I'm going to take another flavor and mix the two together for my own flavor. Maybe that's just me as a creator of ice cream, but I don't know. I'm like never happy when I go to an ice cream shop that's not ours, because I'm like, well, give me one of this and one of this, and I'm gonna like take my bowl and I'm gonna mix the two together. But yeah, I would say just like banana is a very underrated ice cream flavor. You don't see a lot of it either in the grocery store, not but really. We sell quite a bit of it at our farm creamery.
Interesting. Yeah, no, not really. I think maybe because people think it's like savory and it doesn't necessarily go with sweet, but then when you think about sundaes and like banana splits, that doesn't really make sense.
So yeah, exactly.
I don't know, that's interesting. I used to make my ice cream like soup, and you just like mix it and mix it until it's like a soupy consistency when I was a kid, and I don't know why that was a thing, but like all my friends did it too, and it was like the thing to do for some
my kids reason. Still do that. Yeah,
they do. Okay, I actually have one more question for you. I lied That's on that okay. last question. What do you think is the next or up-and-coming trend in the frozen food space? This is my final question.
Well, we're actually working on it. So if I shared it with you, I would be giving it away to all my competitors. But we've got a few exciting innovations up our sleeve. So you'll just have to stay tuned to see what we roll out next.
Okay, dot, dot, dot. Very, very exciting. I love it. Yeah, always leaving on a cliffhanger. It's like all comes back to the books. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on and taking the time out and talking all things ice cream and Shark Tank and entrepreneurship with me. I really appreciate it. It's great to meet you. I'm very excited to see where the company goes.
Awesome to meet you too. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And yeah, if you're ever on the East Coast, please come to Delaware.
Oh, I'm going to take you up on that for sure. Okay. Totally.
Sounds good.
You can keep up with the Frozen Farmers products on their website, thefrozenfarmer.com, or you could keep up with Katie at Katie Jo Evans, KateyJoeVans.
Hey fellow foodies, thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.